We don't know the precise inspiration for Montesquieu's Persian letters. Travellers to the East, particularly French travellers to the East, had stirred up interest. In 1704, there was a sort of epoch-making translation of 1001 Nights, Antoine Galland's translation of this great compilation of tales in which the Princess Scheherazade saves herself by spinning all of these fabulous images of the luxurious, opulent East, had been a sensational success and had completely transformed attitudes to the East. And so Montesquieu is obviously aware of that, inspired by that. He's reading the more historical works of travellers and more even archaeological writings. Sometimes these are quite large, multi-volume texts that are being produced. But it looks as though one inspiration may have been an actual visit to court by a Persian ambassador in 1714, clearly a moment when East sees West, and Montesquieu perhaps had that image in mind when he began to conceive the sort of fiction he might write in which Persian travellers travel from the Orient to Paris, and the entire text is seen through the eyes of these visitors. Other writers had perhaps got there first. There's a man named Bernard who in 1715 brought out something called the Moral, Comic and Satirical Reflections on the Manners of Our Time, in which travellers from the East comment on European mores. And so that's clearly a model, but it's a rather frivolous and perhaps not very substantial model. Whereas Montesquieu, building on that, produces a novel, a work that is a hybrid. It's a novel, it's a collection of essays on philosophical issues, political issues, in which he gives us this dual optic. We see the Persians commenting on the Parisian life, and so this means that Montesquieu's own readers were presented a panorama of their own life through the eyes of visitors. But at the same time, the two Persians, Uzbek and Rika, are in contact with people back home, and so there's a parallel correspondence which gives us their comments on the East. And so the two civilizations are set side by side, and there are points of contact between them. What is the place of women in Europe? What is the place of women in the Orient, in the harem or the seraglio? Who has power in Europe or in France? What is the position of the king versus what is the position of the sultan? Or, in fact, what is the position of these Persians themselves vis-a-vis their own household? So these are the sorts of questions that Montesquieu's novel is set up to address. I think the sight of these Persians visiting Paris probably gave him the conceit of doing it this way. Now, what does he aim to do with the Persian letters? Well, I think in the first instance, he aims to produce a pleasurable text, a text that is enjoyable to read because it pokes fun at assumptions, it satirizes contemporary France. It does so with a light touch. It captures the follies and excesses of this disastrous period of financial exuberance extremely well, this credit bubble that burst, and it keeps certain number of issues in the background, but you get the sense that Montesquieu is a writer of great irony who takes things seriously, but not too seriously. And so the tone, the elegance of his style is something that would have appealed greatly to contemporary French readers. But more enduringly, as I've said, he aimed to use his fiction to foster a spirit of critical inquiry. And this is because very little escapes the questioning of his travellers, whose naive perspective as outsiders is meant to give French readers a new perspective on their own world, what it looks like, how it seems, how they behave. So he's holding up a mirror to contemporaries, and very little is taken for granted. And the absurdity of all sorts of practices is lampooned, but with a rather dry touch. So, for instance, the Persian travellers are absolutely scandalised by the lack of running water when they reach Venice on their way to Paris, because they need to perform certain ritual ablutions. And it had never occurred to them that residents, the inhabitants of Venice, didn't do the same, practice the same sort of ritual, the rituals, and they comment on this. Similarly, one of the Persians who's begun to become a bit sceptical about religious practices writes to an imam, and he says, "Tell us, great wise man, why it is the Jews don't eat pork, and why it is the Muslims don't eat pork. What is the source of this ban?" And we can see in this sort of question a growing awareness of or growing acceptance perhaps of the spirit of inquiry and rational skepticism. And the answer comes, don't ask these questions. It's not your place. Your place is simply to obey. So we see this on both sides. And sometimes the pleasure of the text comes in the application of this spirit of inquiry to patently ridiculous things. So why do people wear wigs that are piled on so high that they can't actually enter the room? They can't actually make their way through the doorway, you know, that sort of thing. What are the origins of these customs?